Hello, and welcome to the Laughing Place podcast. Sorry, it's been a while. I don't have a great excuse, except, you know, we've been doing other things. And there wasn't a lot to talk about, but now that we seem to be getting out of quarantine, lockdown, at least to some extent, we thought we'd check in and see how everybody's doing. So I just want to give a quick plug. If you haven't been paying attention, on our Laughing Place YouTube, we've been doing a lot more broadcasts. Not quite like this, but we've been ramping that up. So we'll still be doing the podcast, but if you want more from us, check out our YouTube channel. But now we'll get to the show. Today I'm joined by Kyle.
Hello.
And Alex.
Hi.
And we are going to talk Disney. So I guess the biggest news that came out about, I don't know, 10 days ago, 15 days ago, was at the shareholder meeting and all about Disney Plus. So obviously they made, you know, they announced the numbers are great. It seems like there's going to be more investment into, you know, streaming services are expanding internationally, not just Disney Plus, but Star, which will be kind of like their version of Hulu. But the big news is after many sort of theatrical delays, Mulan is going to come to Disney Plus, but it's coming in a unique way. You can get it with Premier Access for $29.99 starting September 4th. Now, what this means is you add it on and you have access to Mulan as long – the new Mulan for as long as you're a Disney Plus subscriber. Eventually, it will go off Premier Access and just become part of the subscription as it would, you know, for another film. But if you want it in that first couple months, you'll pay this additional fee, which is not insignificant, but you'll have access to it in lieu of a theatrical release. Now, full disclosure, Bob Chapek said this is a one-off given the situation. However, they will look at the data and see how people feel about it. So, Alex, how do you feel about it?
I think it's cool that we're getting Mulan in some capacity. You know, I know when all of this started, Disney sided with the American Theater Owners Association and stated that they'll wait for theaters to come back in business. But at this point, it's like, how long do you wait? So I like that they're bringing it out. I like that they're doing it the way they're doing it. I mean, it's smart, because they have their own platform. You know, I mean, Universal didn't have Peacock when the first Trolls made its digital premiere. And I think a lot of people are like balking at the price. But the thing about it is you would spend more than that for just two adults to go see Mulan. And like, if you're going as a family of four, even to a matinee, that $30 is barely going to cover, it probably won't cover your ticket prices. Maybe, you know, there are some places, middle America, where theater prices aren't as inflated as they are, you know, on the coast. But I think for the average American who would be going to see Mulan with at least one other person, they're going to be spending less for the $29.99 admission price that lets you see it over and over again. When Trolls World Tour was released on other digital platforms, I think it was $19.99 for your one view. If you wanted to watch it again, you had to pay it again. You know, with Warner Brothers, with Scoob, they did it. It was $19.99, and you basically like bought the digital copy. It was almost like going straight to video without a DVD or a Blu-ray available at the time. So, I mean, Disney could have gone that route, but I think what they did was the right choice for them. And honestly, it's up to you as an individual. You know, if that $30 is so outrageous of a price for forever access to see Mulan, as long as you keep your Disney Plus subscription, you know, if that's outrageous, don't pay it. You know, it will eventually come to Disney Plus for everybody. I am one of the few people who've already seen it. And I mean, you know the story if you've seen the animated one. So, you know, it's not like you're missing out on major things. It's different, obviously. It's a different adaptation, but you know the story. So you could also wait.
Kyle?
The only thing that's kind of weird to me is that a couple weeks after they announced this, then the theaters started reopening. So that's kind of some bad timing. They're all waiting each other out, and then they kind of pulled it from the schedule. I think I agree with a lot of what Alex said. I think it's still unfortunate for theaters. I think that's probably my biggest hesitation, more so than, yeah, everything he says about the $30 price point is spot on. I mean, it is a little different because you have to pay $7 a month in order for the right to pay $30. That's, you know, if you look at it from a certain way, it seems kind of silly. But as far as, it's not the same experience as going to a theater. So you have to take that into account. Like, yes, you can see it more, but if you do value that movie theater experience, then obviously the price difference and the fact that you have to, you know, make up for it with the having a family or having another adult at least.
Well, and I have a question, because when they announced this, this was in addition to a theatrical run where available. So isn't it still going to theaters on September 4th in addition to?
No. So what Disney it's Plus? Doing is in regions where Disney Plus doesn't exist yet, like such as China, it will be released theatrically, but it will not have a theatrical run in the United States. Now, I will say, so there's a couple things that I think about this. One is obviously we're in uncertain times. Disney is still releasing movies theatrically even prior to this, with things like New Mutants and their David Copperfield adaptation. And I absolutely agree that big movies deserve to be seen in a big theater. I have seen Mulan, and I would prefer to see it again in a theater. I also know that that's in California, that's not possible. And while theaters are opening up across the country, there's many key markets where they're not. And, you know, and at the time they made this announcement, I don't know, you know, if anyone knew what was going to happen. But I'm also glad that they did, not that I want to pay extra money, but I'm glad that they differentiated this between the one and only Ivan and Artemis Fowl, because it is a bigger movie. And, you know, I'm a little concerned. While I enjoy many of the Disney Plus originals, they are smaller scale. I don't want to say they're direct to video, but they're, you know, they're sort of like how Disney Channel original movies used to be, you know, bigger than that. But, you know, they're not epic, you know, Disney tent poles that we're used to. And so I'm glad that it is something to differentiate it. I probably still would have gone with a $20 price point, because you do have to pay the extra fee just to be a Disney Plus subscriber. But, you know, as much as I don't want to pay more money, I am glad that it's not just, okay, we're going to flop it on Disney Plus.
At the same time, though, the way I feel about it is, your hardcore Disney fan who's going to go see Mulan opening weekend, not the person who's going to hear word of mouth that it's a good movie and maybe decide to go later, but like your opening weekend Mulan in theaters crowd, isn't that also the Disney Plus like subscriber market, like the core market who would naturally be tapped in and probably took the deal and paid the year in full for Disney Plus?
I would think many of them, you know, that there's obviously crossover, but there's not, you know, it's hard to get into, especially in these times, it's hard to really gauge how much Disney Plus is permeated through the culture. I mean, yes, Disney fans, you know, that watched Howard last week all have Disney Plus, but Mulan is going beyond what we consider, you know, what I like, you know, the sort of pass holder market. It's going for sort of a general audience. I mean, that's why these movies do well. People love them. And it's not just, you know, someone who has a family might, you know, have Disney Plus, but there might be someone who grew up watching Mulan who doesn't have Disney Plus because it doesn't mean, you know, it's just not where their investment is, but then they want to see this movie. So I don't know that it's going to grow subscribers in the way like a Hamilton would presumably, but, you know, I think people who are paying should get a credit. You know, I mean, and for having already paid the $79.99. I still think a $29.99 price is fair. Don't get me wrong. But just if you're looking at the market at where these other movies have landed, it is something to say, okay, this is $30 in addition to – that's basically half a year of Disney Plus. And, you know, that's not a – when you know you can just wait a couple months and get it essentially for the regular Disney Plus price, it just seems like a big step. I'll do it. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, I'm all for free market, you know. They can price whatever they want. It's up to us to decide if we want to pay for it and if it's worth it. See, Mulan is obviously not a right, but you know, I you know, when I look at what it costs for like one of those UFC pay-per-views that on ESPN Plus, which is in a similar situation where you have to be an ESPN Plus subscriber, those are obviously more expensive, but you compare that to what they were before. And this is obviously a test, so I don't want to get too hung up on it either.
Yeah, because those pay-per-views, if I remember correctly, are like 70, or back in the day used to be like $70 to get them through your cable box.
Yeah, and so now they're about 60, so you're paying the $5, you know, or maybe 65. So it comes out about the same, but, you know, you're doing it through ESPN. You have to be an ESPN Plus subscriber.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, or I guess hear, through the next quarterly earnings, how this experiment has paid off or not paid off for Disney. But either way, I mean, I think they're losing money on Mulan no matter what they do.
It'll be interesting because, you know, I know that – I mean, I don't know how much Mulan costs. But, you know, I know that the troll people are very happy with what happened. But also, this isn't Trolls. And also, I never heard from that again. I wonder if, you know, they were the first and people tried it. But, like, I didn't hear people reacting to Scoob, you know, so these other direct – these skipping – to, you know, aside of something like Hamilton, which is a different case, I haven't heard a lot of that sort of, yay, we're so pleased with the results talk that I did with, you know, Trolls World Tour initially.
Yeah, and Scoob, I mean, you're right. There wasn't a ton of buzz about it after it came out. And then I think because Disney was putting things like Onward on Disney Plus pretty quickly, they felt compelled to put it on HBO Max, like, shortly after the service launched, and I heard nothing about it. Like, I discovered that myself through my own HBO Max, but, like, that didn't appear in my Twitter timeline, whereas other Hanna-Barbera stuff does. Like, the fact that Flintstones is coming out on Blu-ray made my Twitter.
Moving on, there's two things that make me think that the world is ending. And I'm not talking about COVID or Killer Hornets. New Mutants is going to come out in theaters August 28th, 2020. And Magic Camp has been released on Disney Plus. So I guess I should start with Alex because he's our movie guy. Talk about Magic Camp.
So Magic Camp, you know, it's interesting. I think there was this perception that it must be really bad, just like unsalvageably bad, because Disney made it. They said it was coming. They had a release date. Then they pushed that release date back. And then after doing that, they just pulled it from the release schedule and you never heard about it again. And it was like this weird dark secret, Magic Camp's locked in a vault. They announced it's coming to Disney Plus, I think just 3 weeks before it appeared. And in terms of like promotion for it, you know, unlike a lot of the other things on Disney Plus, even the new originals, there was never any like TV ads. They put a trailer on YouTube, they put out a poster, and then it was here. And, you know, I quite liked it. Like it shocked me, because I think I went into it just expecting the worst. It's actually very sweet. And, you know, Benji was mentioning that it's, you know, Disney doesn't make these types of films anymore. And it's interesting that this would have gone to theaters because Magic Camp is very much the type of film they would have done in the 90s. You know, it's about this group of kind of misfit kids who discover at this summer camp to teach them about magic that the things that make them quirky are actually strengths that they can use in the world to help them So, you know, they're confronting bullies. The main character, Nathan, has recently lost his father. So it's actually quite touching because he's reconnecting with his dad through this hobby that they shared of magic, now that his dad's no longer with him. And, I mean, the one thing I will say is it kind of gets a little bit muddy in terms of its narrative, because while it's following Nathan on his adventure to camp, the main counselor for Nathan's group is played by Adam Devine. And he was a former camper who tried to make it as a magician, and his career didn't take off. But another former camper who's back as a counselor this year, her career is skyrocketing, and she's headlining magic shows in Las Vegas. So you kind of have that plot going on. And I will say, at times, as a viewer, it was a little confusing. Whose plot line am I supposed to really be tapped into? Because it's almost equal for both of them. But I mean, the only real criticism I can give it is that narrative muddiness, and the fact that it's, I think we assumed it was this, you know, heavy comedy. I think because it draws parallels to me for Heavyweights, and I knew that it came from an idea by Steve Martin, who's such a funny comedian and comedic actor. But it's much more sincere and heartfelt than that, and I really enjoyed it. I don't think Magic Camp's destined to become many people's favorite movie of all time. But what's kind of funny about it is, you know, we're almost a week after it debuted. And so by the time this podcast airs, if you go to our YouTube, you'll be able to see a video of me interviewing some of the kids from Magic Camp, 3 years older than they were when they filmed it. And we're recording that tomorrow. So you can check that out. I do recommend checking out Magic Camp. It's not this epic failure that society made us believe it might be.
Yeah, I was really expecting a dumpster fire, just because I wasn't really following it. But I remember when they sort of announced it. Then I remember when they started filming it. You know, and there had been changes. Steve Martin disappeared. Adam Levine Devine came in, and you know, it was filmed, and they put out, I think, even like a publicity still, and then disappeared into the ether. And then we all kind of presumed it would pull like a new Noel, where it would just be on Disney Plus, you know, fairly soon after that. And they, you know, do the normal sort of not big theatrical promotion, but do something. And then Disney Plus launches, no mention of Magic Camp. Months go by. We're nearly a year into Disney Plus and facing a dearth of content. It finally shows up with no publicity. A trailer that comes out the Monday before the movie comes out. And what I thought was interesting was how well it's doing. If you presume that Disney Plus, the trending, means something, and I think it does because it would make no sense otherwise. And it's, you know, it's at least it's in there, considering, you know, it's The Simpsons, Greatest Showman, Mickey Mouse Clubhouse, Moana, Zombie 2, Frozen, Jesse, which is always up there, Hamilton, Onward, Toy Story 3, Frozen, and Magic Camp. And I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like there's more to the story. What are your thoughts?
My speculation, which I unintentionally spent way too much time in my written review going through of just like what happened, how did this get, you know, buried and locked in a vault like an animaniac and then finally let free when Disney had no other content to put out. But my assumption, I had forgotten from the original casting announcements that Jeffrey Tambor was associated, because that was early 2017. And by the end of 2017, when I think Disney had pushed the release date back once, by that point, by October, Jeffrey Tambor was, you know, caught up in the Me Too with an era with a couple of accusations and ended up losing a lot of jobs. I forgot that he did some voice work for Disney Channel shows. So he was let go of Tangled the series and Star versus the Forces of Evil. I think the bigger headline splasher was being let go of Transparent on Prime Video, and then also caused a lot of controversy with the promotion of Fox's last season of Arrested Development on Netflix. But I had just completely forgotten that he was in this until, you know, I started playing it. And then, it's like 5 minutes in that he first appears. He is the head of the Institute of Magic, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily a small part, but it's also not a huge part. I know there have been other actors replaced from films with bigger roles after principal photography shut down or stopped. And so from what I could tell, like as I was watching it, I was thinking, how could you have reshot this to eliminate him? It would have taken a few digital tricks to get him out of like big group shots and replaced with somebody else. But for the most part, his footage is mostly one-on-one with Adam Devine. So you shoot those scenes and get, you know, Adam back in. And thankfully he doesn't age that much in 3 years because he's in his 30s, like the kids have done. And so they could have, I feel like, edited him out if they wanted to. They must have weighed the option of like the cost of doing that and the headlines of announcing that they're doing that compared to just, you know, cutting their losses and never releasing Magic Camp, which, you know, who's to say if they were never going to release it, but they certainly were in no hurry to, you know, like Benji said, Noelle was originally announced for theaters. And then I don't think it ever got as far as it did have a date. It got bumped for Nutcracker. It was supposed to come out the year Nutcracker and the Four Realms came out. But because that production got delayed a full year, they bumped Noelle out. So that was also just sitting there collecting some dust. But like that was a launch title on Disney Plus. You feel like Magic Camp could have been that. And I think the reason it wasn't was Jeffrey Tambor. And I think when Disney was suddenly desperate for some content for Disney Plus, they probably took a look at, you know, the fact that no one's really talking about him anymore. He's not a huge part of the movie. They probably took the gamble of like, maybe people have forgotten. And also there's this whole new movement to cancel culture. And I mean, you know, not that many people got canceled the way Jeffrey Tambor was canceled. Like he lost everything. And his IMDb, he hasn't done anything since Magic Camp.
So to be clear, this is speculation. We don't know.
This is. Yeah. This is all my assumption. Cause I mean, Disney never said the reason why they ended the release of Magic Camp. But I mean, the assumptions that it's a terrible movie have proved to be false. So what else is there?
So, you know, I think if that was the case, and once again, we do not know, there could have been a myriad of reasons, but in the end, it almost ended perfectly, right? Like no one noticed, no one, you know, there was no sort of backlash. They didn't do any publicity, you know, at least with the adult cast. So you didn't have to have that awkwardness where, you know, why isn't he here? And then, you know, someone's inevitably going to ask about it, and people still saw it. Still, you know, it's still on Disney Plus. Once it gets to Disney Plus, it's not like Mulan where it needs to sell. It just, you know, it's just part of the programming. So it just, you know, they take some of the money that they couldn't use this summer, maybe put it to Magic Camp, and everyone's happy. So, you know, in the end, we could talk about it's a shame that the movie didn't get a bigger push, but it's on Disney Plus where anyone can find it. So, you know, it seems like it, for once, things actually worked out.
Well, first of all, I think it's more of a contributing factor than like a main reason. I guess it could have been a launch title, but also, I mean, I feel like Noelle being a launch title has more to do with the fact that it debuted in November than anything else. I think, you know, once Disney realized that they were going to have a streaming service, then it just didn't make sense to release this theatrically. It doesn't mean it was terrible. It just means that they don't release these types of movies theatrically anymore. This, you know, it probably wasn't going to make any money unless it got really lucky. There's a chance it could have hit, but those odds are so slim. Like any time thing that they've released in even like this at all, which I guess would be like Alexander, and even that was based on a book, so that kind of has a different tie-in than this did, where it's a completely original story with six screenwriters. But I think you make a good point, is that it's not terrible. I really enjoyed it. Actually, Becca watched it first, just had it on in the background, and then she's like, yeah, you're going to have to watch this because you're really going to like it. And then we watched it again. So she watched it twice. And I did think it was, contrary to what Alex was saying, I actually did think it was really funny. Like even little things. They kind of harp on it more later, but the first time he said like the pre-memorial theater or something, that made me laugh.
I really enjoyed the movie too. And a part of what made us feel that this movie is different is how close we are and how Disney didn't, share anything like with Noel, Togo, One and Only Ivan, any of these other movies that are Disney Plus original or were theatrical and became Disney Plus originals. There's a certain level of communication with Disney about it. And what made this one seem, and you know, obviously you guys don't know, you know, the emails we send back and forth with Disney, but for this one, it was just radio silence and it was different. And there's reasons that could have been. It could have been resources, you know, due to furlough. It could have been wanting to make sure Ivan had the attention. But it just felt weird. And it kind of that's why when I turned it on, I was like, you know, I even had it on at work, you know, just sort of in the background, because I was like, you know, let me just get through it so I know what it is. And I end up, you know, really enjoying it. And, you know, it's heartwarming. It could be a little saccharine in that Disney way, but I thought it was funny. I thought the magic was cool. And the way, you know, the sort of optic effects they did at times just to make it seem like magic was neat. So I enjoyed it. I wish it had a little bit more distance from Ivan, just so it could have been, you know, the Disney Plus movie of the month or something, as opposed to the week before Ivan.
To your point about the magic, I did like how it was actually like realistic magic, if that sounds stupid to say. But it wasn't like Now You See Me, where some of the stuff is just so supernatural almost.
Right. It's all stuff that you could make believe that they did the magic trick. Like it's, you know, you go see a magic show and it was that kind of magic. It wasn't so out of the world that it just, you know, and you don't even know how they do it. Like you could imagine that they would, in a bonus feature, tell you the trick. But
yeah, it's funny too. Cause I mean, you know, they didn't send out screeners, and the only other review of it that I've read tried to compare it to Harry Potter. And like, as a huge Harry Potter fan, I never once drew a comparison, because they're not like at Hogwarts camp. They're not pretending that like magic is real. They're learning how to be Lance Burton, you know?
There's nothing to do with that kind of magic.
No, this is like, you know, I want to be Chris Angel mind freak. And in fact, like the character that plays opposite Adam Devine is very much inspired by Mind Freak. I think her name is like Dark Freak or something like that.
Darkwood.
Thank you. Like it's like almost a play on Mind Freak.
So there's another movie coming to Disney Plus this Friday, assuming we get this up this week. The one and only Genuine American Family Ivan.
I see what you tried to do there.
What's that?
I said, I see what you tried to do there.
Yeah, thank you. So Alex, what do you think about The One and Only Ivan?
The One and Only Ivan is, it's very sweet. It's, so here's the deal. It's based on a true story, but indirectly. The true story of a silverback gorilla named Ivan who lived at a strip mall in Washington State inspired a children's book called The One and Only Ivan, which was, took the basic concept, gorilla strip mall, built an animal world around him, put him kind of as the star of a little circus that's in this strip mall. And then that's the story that Disney has adapted as a film. And I'll say that I enjoyed it. I don't want to, you know, make anyone think I didn't. As an animal lover, it's hard as an adult to watch it, and you know, just knowing the real the real story that goes behind it, which Disney nicely gives you at the very end. So like right when the credits should start to play, kind of as an epilogue, they give you some pictures of the real Ivan, some facts about his real life, and some footage of kind of the end result. But for me, kind of those themes of a wild animal in a, not necessarily just in captivity, but in a situation in captivity that's, you know, incredibly unideal. Like, it's not like basically Ivan never saw outdoors for 27 years. He was stuck in a cage for that long. That was, you know, way too small for him. So like, that's the part of it that's just, you know, so heartbreaking. Now in the story, there's an elephant that's part of the troupe named Stella, and she is getting very old. And Bryan Cranston, who runs the circus, gets a new baby elephant named Ruby. And Ruby is very inquisitive. She was born in captivity, so she doesn't know what life is like in the wild. And she's just fascinated by that concept of being, you know, truly free to roam wherever you want out in the wild, and keeps asking questions. And it kind of forces Ivan to start to think about his life before he got to where he is now. And then through the daughter of one of the caretakers at this little strip mall circus, he is gifted a box of crayons and some paper, and he learns to draw. And that becomes the attraction of his act, rather than just, you know, standing there and roaring. He walks up to an easel and draws a picture. And through doing that and the things that he draws, the audience starts to catch on that he's trying to say something, that he's trying to get free. And he's specifically in the film trying to do it for the baby elephant. So it's very touching. It's whimsical because it has all these circus elements. The voice cast, which is an all-star cast that includes Helen Mirren, Angelina Jolie, who also produces the film, Chaka Khan is in it. So there's some big names, and Danny DeVito is Bob the dog, who is my personal favorite character of the bunch. But you know, you have this really great voice cast. The animal characters, for the most part, are computer animated. So they didn't, you know, use real animals, except for in the credits, they give credit to like a parrot handler. Other than that, I think even the dogs are all CG. And so, I mean, it's sweet, it's cute. My main issue was kind of going back to Walt Disney's philosophy of storytelling, where for every big down, you have to have a big up, is that One and Only Ivan doesn't, I don't feel like it captures that balance right. To me, a lot of the humor played very young. There were a few examples where they actually played more towards adults, including a Chaka Khan inside joke, and some scenes where Bob the dog, played by Danny DeVito, just his kind of perception of the world and the way humans work is very funny, to should be funny to anyone who's viewing, and especially to anybody who has dogs. But other than that, I felt like most of the humor was playing to the younger crowd, but I do appreciate that they never went to any fart jokes or poop jokes along the way. And I definitely recommend checking it out. But I think ultimately, I mean, One and Only Ivan, I feel like, came to Disney Plus because the theaters weren't around. Otherwise, this was still heading to theaters when everything started to shut down, as far as I can remember. But I think ultimately it's best that it premieres as a Disney Plus original, because I think it's the kind of thing where if you paid a lot of money to go and see it or took a lot of time out, you might be more disappointed. But just having it at your streaming disposal probably makes it easier if you don't absolutely love it.
Yeah, to me it was always weird that this was not a Disney Plus original. It seemed, I mean, maybe it was budget or whatever, but to me this seems like the quintessential Disney Plus original. You know, not franchise based, larger in scope, you know, bigger budget, but small story.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Mighty Joe Young, you know, like it's not particularly thrilling or exciting at any point. And And I think the reason it was going to theaters is just that it probably cost a lot more than your average Disney Plus movie, just being that the majority of the cast are computer animated characters. And in fact, like the main star who takes up most of the screen time is done in computers, and that's not cheap.
So Kyle, I'm guessing you haven't seen it yet, but do you plan to once it comes to Disney Plus?
Wasn't interested that much in theaters. I mean, I might get around to it if I hear more good things, which haven't yet based on all that. But yeah, not my cup of tea.
I mean, I'm not saying it's bad by any means. I personally have some conflicts with it. And, you know, of the two, I would watch Magic Camp again over One and Only Ivan.
Yeah, there's three Disney Plus original films this month. And what's that? What's the fourth?
Well, Howard.
Oh, Howard. Okay. Well, let's take Howard out of it. That's
okay.
That's a whole other ball game. But of the three, and we can't review Phineas and Ferb yet, but I think Ivan is the biggest swing. I mean, biggest budget, but I think it's my least favorite. That being said, I really enjoyed all three, and I would see all three again.
I concur. Yeah, I think it's sort of sad, like you said, that, you know, they didn't give Magic Camp enough space by putting Ivan on its heels. I feel like that's true of Ivan. And actually, today they announced everything coming in September. And if you take out Mulan in September, there's just one Disney Plus original film. I almost did what Benji just did. But there's just one Disney Plus original film, which happens to be produced by Disney Channel, coming in September. And they could have spread these out, maybe done one film every other week to let them breathe a little more. But I feel like they're just trying to get through like the end of summer by giving kind of a last hurrah, because a lot of kids are going either back to school or back to at-home learning.
Well, you remember that originally the Secret Society of Secondborn Royals was supposed to come out in July.
That's true.
But I feel like by kind of front-loading it, I'm gauging that they kind of want to have enough over there for the holiday weekend that's coming up, you know, Labor Day.
Mm.
So, you know, and then maybe because that might be a time when people are binging, especially since other options are limited.
That's true.
Yeah. There's a couple more things I want to kind of address regarding the future of Disney Plus and Disney streaming in general. One is Agnes Chu, who is running basically programming for Disney Plus, is leaving to go to Condé Nast. And I think it's pretty obvious that the Disney Plus programming strategy was evolving. And I don't mean that in a negative way, you know, in that it's bad and so they're making it good. I think, you know, they're kind of throwing everything to the wall to see what sticks, you know, when they first started, and especially, you know, there was a lot of ideas out there. But, you know, I think they're getting a better sense of the kind of things they want to produce. I think they also want Disney Plus to get a little bit out of the way for some things that are being produced by other, you know, studios within it. You know, they're not supposed to be the creative engine. They're supposed to be the distributor. So, you know, I think there's been sort of reports that Disney Plus might have been a little too hands-on. And in fact, you know, I realized that we're going through this, and I didn't even put something on the list that's on Disney Plus because I completely forgot about it. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But the other thing is Bob Chapek announced – so they announced basically they've reached the low end of their 2025 target for Disney Plus subscribers with over 60 million subscribers already. He announced that in a couple months – I don't know what that means except, you know, in the coming months – they're going to do another Investor Day. And if you remember the Investor Day they did in April of the previous year you know, that's where they kind of rolled out the programming, pricing, strategy. And I think you're going to get a little bit more of an update regarding their investment in Disney Plus, perhaps some new announcements regarding programming and the pace of that programming, as well as the future for the non-Disney branded streaming services, namely ESPN Plus and Hulu/Star. So there's the Disney Plus of today, I don't think is going to look the same a year from now. I think the pandemic has changed Disney Plus, and I think the success of Disney Plus is inherently changed Disney Plus. I did want to bring up Muppets Now, which I totally forgot about. Kyle, have you seen any?
Nope.
Alex?
I have seen all of the episodes that have aired plus one.
And your thoughts?
I don't hate it. I know some people absolutely hate it. And I will say as well, like, I'm a huge Muppets fan. I enjoyed the ABC series, The Muppets, not to be confused with the film of the same name. I had no moral objections to that show. I know some people, you know, thought it was appalling how modern they were being. And, you know, the Muppets show was boundary pushing. So I don't mind the Muppets pushing boundaries in any way. The format of this, it's kind of funny because I know that it was filmed pre-pandemic, but it feels like something that you would make during, which is that, like, the Muppets aren't all together. They're kind of in their own little pods doing their own thing. Like, it's Miss Piggy has her own little show. And that's the other thing, is these are all like little web shows. So it's almost like a series of Muppet shorts where Scooter is stringing them together by uploading them. You know, going back to Muppet Show, Scooter was kind of running the behind the scenes, the back of house of the show. So he's still kind of doing that by basically uploading all of the videos that all the other Muppets send in to be part of the show. So as you're watching, it's supposed to be live. I find myself laughing a lot, which is what I come to the Muppets for. I mean, Muppets are good for storytelling purposes as well. There's really very little or none of that in Muppets Now. But it's an improvised show to a point. I do think quite a bit of it is obviously set up. But like, I love Swedish Chef, and the fact that you have a weekly Swedish Chef cooking segment pitted against other celebrity chefs, I think is so funny. I love Beaker of the Beaker Bunsen Honeydew duo, and I love their little segments. I'm a big Piggy fan, but I will say her segment always feels like it goes on a minute or two too long. Like, Piggy talking about herself is funny as like a moment where she shows up in the middle of something else happening, but it's not necessarily funny all on its own. But I mean, I don't hate Muppets Now. I wouldn't say it's what I thought it was going to be or what I necessarily was hoping for. But I don't dislike it by any means.
I have a theory that originally it was going to be released as shorts, a la Disney Family Sundays or Pixar in Real Life. And then they created the framing device in, you know, after the pandemic to flesh it out. After I think they saw that it wasn't that the shorts were not really hitting. And I think, because if you look at the credits, it says something very special thanks to those who graciously stayed quiet, lending us their homes, offices, bedrooms, toys, possessions, and support. So I think the bits with Scooter and interacting with the other Muppets, to a point, I think that is filmed, you know, post-pandemic.
Mm.
And then the bits where, you know, the game, Pepe's Game Show, obviously Swedish Chef, that those were done. It's almost like they took show, you know, there was a while there where the Muppets were really doing a bunch of like online series. It's kind of like they took those. And in fact, they're produced by the same people, the people that did the Muppets online stuff, produced this series and then turned it into a show. So I have no problem with it. I don't think it's bad. I think it can be funny. I just worry that it will weaken the Muppets brand because it doesn't have the production scope of, you know, a typical Muppet show, and a Muppet show in the broad sense, not the Muppet show. So you know, now when time comes again, I don't know, you know, they're going to see that this is sort of fair to middling. Are they going to be willing to invest in the Muppets? And, you know, Doobie and the gang just did a great dig a little deeper about Muppet. Well, basically it was about the Muppets under the auspice that it was about Muppets Vision 3D. But we, you know, you learn about the history of the Muppets and, you know, they come and go. But I hope that this doesn't ruin the chance for sort of a proper Muppet project is, I guess, my biggest concern out of all this.
Yeah. I mean, what I would love, I mean, you know, one of the opportunities that I always saw for Disney Plus was that you wouldn't have a Hocus Pocus style situation again, where, you know, that film grew in popularity and Disney didn't really react or realize how big it had become until very recently. I mean, the amount of merchandise Shop Disney has put out for Hocus Pocus this year, you would think it was brand new in theaters right now. And you never had anything. Like, there was a movie tie-in book and that was it. There wasn't even a soundtrack in 1993. So, I mean, I think that that opportunity is there. I hope that, you know, through Disney Plus, a lot of people have watched the Muppet movies, because, I mean, as great as it would be to have the Muppet Show on there, you know, what I really go to as comfort food when I want the Muppets is Great Muppet Caper, Muppet Christmas Carol. Like, that's what I go to time and time again versus any single episode of the Muppet Show. And I think it would be really cool to see Muppets as a movie franchise continue, even if it's like a film every other year on Disney Plus, you know, because I mean, the Muppets did well, the movie called The Muppets, Muppets Most Wanted for whatever didn't, even though I liked it better than The Muppets.
Well, that's just wrong.
It's so much. I will say Great Muppet Caper outside of Muppet Christmas Carol, which is a holiday film, which is my true favorite Muppet film. But Great Muppet Caper is my absolute favorite. And Muppets Most Wanted feels almost like a direct sequel to Great Muppet Caper.
I think you bring up an interesting point in that, once again, going back to the trending list on Disney Plus, I was not aware of the love of Moana and Jessie. Those two properties are constantly high up on their rankings. I mean, Simpsons is usually one or two. Then, you know, the sort of The Greatest Showman obviously has been popular lately. But then right there is Moana and Jessie. And I wouldn't have known that. You know, I would have put Jessie in the same bucket as any other Disney Channel series. And Moana, when it came out, I thought it did fine, but it obviously wasn't Frozen level of pandemonium, and it didn't reach the, you know, Little Mermaid, Aladdin levels of crazy. So I was just, I thought it was like, you know, Ron and John sort of diminishing returns, but apparently it's very popular and it makes a lot more sense now that they're building a whole new attraction at Epcot or experience at Epcot. So, you know, I think it'll be, I there's some other things that I wish were trending. There's some hidden gems on Disney Plus that I wish more people were watching. You know, it's insightful to me to see what people are actually watching. And as Bob Chapek has said, it's not really the new stuff. It's the classic stuff. But since we beat Disney Plus to death, let's move to the parks. So Walt Disney World seems to be having some challenges. You know, Florida had a spike in COVID cases that's starting to come back down, but I think it hurt people's perception of traveling. Even though, you know, it might be fine now, I think people saw that, you know, it wasn't just a straight line down and that there was a bump back up. And as such, they've delayed some hotel reopenings and reducing park hours right after the Labor Day holiday. So, I guess, is this surprising to you, Kyle?
Not really. I mean, I think it could have been worse. I think they kind of had to open, especially for more, even though they were opening with a lower capacity, I think you kind of wanted to have longer hours as well, just to make sure you spread out those crowds. And I think as they kind of figure out what's working and what's not, they do kind of have to dial it in. And as far as what they're spending, And since we haven't met since the shareholders meeting, they did mention that Disney World is currently operating at a profit, probably not a large one, but they are remaining profitable. And so I think this is probably just part of that to make sure that that stays the case, even after Splash Mountain merchandise is sold out.
You know, it's, you know, traditionally, you know, Disney World will reduce park hours after the Labor Day holiday. It doesn't take a genius to figure that one out. But it's funny to think of these park hours have gradually been expanding since the 25th anniversary. That was really when it was open. Magic Kingdom was open past 7 every night. You know, it used to be 7 was sort of their normal close. And then, you know, you would go to midnight in the holidays. And so, you know, in the end, yes, I expect there to be less guests in the fall than I do during the summer. However, I had presumed that as, you know, we got further through the COVID process that, you know, the cases would go down and confidence would go up. But it seems like that's not the case, as I think the course of the pandemic kind of didn't follow what we initially thought was going to be the path of it. You know, we heard of, you know, spikes in the winter and, you know, generally gradually going down during the summer. And it seemed to go up when people had initially thought it was going to go down. And so I think, you know, I think it just really hits home to me that until there's either, you know, a vaccine or the cases get down to a completely negligible level, you know, we're probably going to be facing this, you know, for another 6 months or so. Alex?
I agree, I think, with pretty much everything you guys said. The one thing I do think is kind of funny is, you know, they're not having Mickey's Not So Scary this year, but the park closes at the time where day guests would have had to have vacated on a Not So Scary night. So I think it's kind of interesting. But, like, they're not having fireworks. I think of, like, the things that I would want to do at Magic Kingdom, for example, in a day. And, you know, if I'm getting there before 10 with, you know, what the wait times are reported to be with the reduced capacity, I feel like I would get everything done by then. I'm just curious to see, you know, how much this drives people over to Disney Springs. Like, does Disney Springs start to hit capacity nightly because none of the parks are open past 7?
You know, people always don't think right about park hours. They think of it as like, oh, I want to get more hours for, you know, the same price. But the way park hours are determined is Disney feels like you should get on a certain number of attractions in a day to make you feel like you've had a full experience. The busier it is, the longer you're going to wait, and therefore the longer it will take to get on that sort of full plate.
Yeah. If you go on 4th of July, you're lucky to ride four things in the whole entire day.
If it's dead, you're going to get on more attractions, even though the park's open a less amount than you would if it was busier. That's the rationale behind park hours. I mean, there's other things that go into it, such as, you know, nighttime shows and dining and all that. But in this current environment, it's basically how long does it, based on the number of guests we can get in the park versus the number of guests that want to be in the park, how many guests, you know, how long do we have to be open? And it seems like now the annual pass day guests ticket availability outside of Hollywood Studios is fairly robust. So, you know, I guess it just sort of makes sense. But our friends at Universal have closed several attractions, including
to your point, you know, Universal's closed some attractions while, you know, keeping their park hours the same. But also Disney has, in a way, added a new experience at Disney Hollywood Studios with that, I forget what it's called, but the little symphony experience at the Theater of the Stars with some, you know, pop-up characters involved. you know, while the equity battle still ensues, they've found a way to use that space as another thing for people to do at Hollywood Studios while they wait for their Rise of the Resistance return time.
Yeah, well, you know, what's funny is that attraction's probably not long for this world because Disney made an agreement with Equity. But the following attractions are closed currently at Universal: A Day in the Park with Barney, which, breaking news, that was still there. Canyon Coda's Twirl and Hurl, the spinner. Fast and Furious Supercharged, Tradition by Subtraction. Fear Factor Live. Storm Force Acceleration, which is their teacup experience. And Poseidon's Fury, which I didn't even know how you did Poseidon's Fury social distance, but whatever. Not on the list is the Jimmy Fallon ride, which I find disappointing.
That is very disappointing.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't think any of those are game changers.
You know, well, and Hagrid's was struck by lightning, so
well, to say that's now reopened. But,
oh, it's reopened now?
Yes.
Okay.
And it wasn't struck by lightning. That was a fire. It was a fire. The attraction was struck by lightning was Rise of the Resistance, which is also reopened.
Well, I'm just full of false facts.
Kyle, do you miss the chance to do Fast and Furious Supercharged? Is that going to affect your planning?
Yeah, I guess it's going to affect my planning because now I'll have to go to Hollywood and do the same thing, but with other good attractions as part of it.
I have a feeling this might be reopened by the time Universal Studios Hollywood reopens.
I don't know. The gift shop is still open, so the highlight of your tour is still available.
And while all this is happening, we're still waiting for Disneyland to reopen. Bits and pieces of Downtown Disney are reopening, Ralph Brennan's Jazz Kitchen being the most recent. But no news on that front. California had a little bit of a system issue where they had no idea how many people had COVID. So they sort of paused all movement and are trying to get that all straightened out. But I do not think Disneyland will be opening in the next few weeks.
And then once it does, they'll turn off the power.
Yeah. California's kind of a mess. Lovingly, I say that, but between fires, power outages, heat, and a complete debacle with the COVID system, it's not been a great month for California.
There was a fire tornado.
Do you think Disneyland will reopen before the end of the year?
Honestly, I don't know. I think there's
Hong
a point
Kong
where
Disneyland still needs to reopen. Reopen a second time, I should say.
I think we're reaching the point where, and I honestly don't know, you know, what's going to happen. I don't know where cases are going to be. I mean, I've given up predicting that. But I think you're getting to a point where now when you start worrying about, you know, the winter. And I mean, granted, it's 800 degrees today. But, you know, if it starts to get into the winter season where, you know, the cold and flu could sort of magnify the problems here. I don't know. It's you know, the sort of sweet spot was sort of August, September in terms of getting everything back. And, you know, you could test things out and then kind of see how things go. But I don't, you know, I don't think you want to reopen for Christmas and New Year's. I think that's just asking for trouble. So I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I thought when they announced the reopening date, I thought that was very optimistic of July 17th. I thought that was also a terrible day to pick because you're just asking for people to want to be there. But then, you know, I think, yeah, I always kind of predicted September 1st was going to be the day for both Disneyland and Disney World. And I was way off on Disney World. They opened much earlier. But, you know, I don't think Disneyland's almost definitely not going to make it to that date either. But on the other side. So I don't know. And, you know, I feel for the cast more than anybody. Just because, you know, everyone wants to get back to work and making magic and doing the thing. Obviously, everyone wants to be safe, but it's a struggle. And I'm not here to blame anybody, but, you know, it's sad that basically 2020 is going to be a lost year.
Yeah, and I know Disneyland APs are also feeling very left out with all the things that Disney World APs have gotten over the past couple weeks.
And you know, on the park side too, you know, I mean, just to get a little bit of inside LP is you know, you try and balance out parks and studios and all the other things going on. But even Disney World, which is reopened, you know, they're not pushing it. They're not really marketing it. And so there's not, you know, we're not excited about new attractions coming. We're not, you know, we talk about attractions leaving Epcot's plan. You know, we're not at this point, we probably would be talking already about the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney World that we're not talking about. It's hard to get excited about the parks right now. You know, with production starting to come back, you know, today they announced the Dancing with the Stars cast, which isn't, you know, a huge deal, but you're starting to see TV get a little bit back to normal. And, you know, we're starting to hear movies resuming production. So that's building a sense of optimism in terms of, having content come back and things to look forward to, which is obviously, you know, in the scheme of the universe, isn't that big of a deal. But at the parks, you know, there's nothing. There's no word about when Disneyland's even going to reopen. But then again, Disney World's not talking about anything either. And it's not a big deal, you know, in a global pandemic. But I look forward to sort of the daily wake up at 6 and find out what the big park story is this morning on the parks blog. And right now we're lucky if we get, you know, some crummy recipe. And that's the big park story.
I think luckiest is that there's a birth. Right. Yeah.
And, you know, that's usually like the B story or the C story, you know, and, you know, it's just kind of boring.
Yeah. Well, specifically I was talking about the 30% discount for annual pass holders being extended to Shop Disney for a limited time. But that's only for Disney World annual pass holders. And then today they announced, you have to be obviously at Disney World to do this, but they're launching a Haunted Mansion Funko figure that's exclusive to the parks, but it's seemingly only debuting at Disney World, which is kind of contrary to their original announcement that they wouldn't debut new merchandise where you have to like queue up to get it. And they're doing
it. Seems weird, right?
It seems really weird. And they're doing it as an annual pass holder, like day early sale, I think on the 19th instead of the 20th. No, that can't be because that's tomorrow.
It's 18th instead of the 19th instead of the 20th.
Oh, yeah. It's tomorrow. They announced that shortly. Tomorrow, the 19th, annual pass holders can go to World of Disney at Disney Springs or Frontierland Mercantile if they have a Magic Kingdom park entry pass. And you know, potentially buy all of the stock that there exists of this figure, because in the verbiage that Disney put out, it said it'll go on sale to, you know, regular Disney World guests on the 20th if there's any supplies left. You know, and I think the limitations are 3 per transaction, and it's limited 1 transaction per pass holder for that day. But it's like, you know, I can see where if I was, you know, living within a drivable distance to Disneyland to like get there tomorrow at that short of a notice, and hearing that, you know, Disney World gets to buy all pass holders get to buy all of this figure and can save 30% online, and my park's not even open. And you know, I would feel pretty
fair though.
Too.
Disney World passes the clock has resumed ticking, whereas Disneyland is still frozen.
Right,
they're not paying for anything really at this point.
It's true. I think there's just this feeling of like, you know, I've been loyal to you for however long I've had my pass, and you know,
I still can't get into the country where my pass is located. And that clock is ticking.
Oh, Paris misses you. Paris announced today they're closing one of their hotels. Another one will open in December. But that was interesting. You know, just looking at international, I know Hong Kong Disneyland closed again for different reasons, but you know, Disneyland Paris opened as the only Disney park in all of Europe, and apparently business wasn't booming enough to need that other hotel for a while.
Okay. So we are going to probably take next week off, but we'll be back the following week. We'll be talking Mulan, Phineas and Ferb. What's that called? Phineas and Ferb, Candace Against the Universe, and New Mutants, maybe. maybe even Diver Copperfield. Who knows? And whatever the parks throw at us between now and then. So thanks so much. Also, once again, just check out every day at 4 o'clock. We're going to be debuting a parks-related video. It could be either a ride-through, a live chat show, trivia. It could be a myriad of things. So check us out every day at 4 on YouTube. And until then, we'll see you next time.